Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017, number 33. And this is with Clarion from the Alt-Right Facebook page and now whatisthealtright.com. So, welcome, Clarion.
Oh, thanks for having me. Very glad to be here.
Okay, so I think some people might be surprised to hear that there is a sort of central alt-right page on Facebook. So why don't you tell people about the history of that page and what kind of traffic it gets, you know, what kind of people
right.
show up on it?
The kind of people, too, is interesting. The history of the page started before me. I didn't start the page. My partner, James, started the page. I want to say it was about 3 years ago, if I know correctly. He began the page. There was no alt-right space of any kind that on Facebook. And so he started that shortly after he started it. I had just become aware of the alt-right maybe 6 or 8 months before I contacted him. And I actually sent him a message, not knowing him or anything about the space, because I had questions and there was a opportunity there to message him. So I messaged him as a new person into the alt-right, and I didn't even know if I would get an answer, because I imagined that there was some, you know, like Jared Taylor or Richard Spencer, you know, sitting behind the screen, and it was James. And I was one of the first, right? I mean, you know, I had this idea that everything was really big in the alt-right, which is funny to me now, but at the time, so like this is about, I guess about 2 years ago, I was one of the first people to actually personally message. And so we began to message quite a bit, and he was really helpful in helping me to understand things that was hard to get a handle on from the material. There's so much material out there, a lot of it really esoteric because it had been going on for, you know, 8 years or something at that point. So I was a person who was active on his alt-right space, and it was pretty small when I got involved, just as a participant in his space, and it's just grown and grown and grown and grown. And this past summer, he messaged and asked me if I would like to be his partner on it, because it was just too much, too big for him at that point for one person.
Yeah, it gets like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, we have, it's in the neighborhood of 15,000 followers or likes or whatever that's considered, but we're just deluged with messages. Like, I can't tell you how many messages we get every day, and most of them are from people who are really new or who are still absolute normies, and a lot of it is, what is the alt-right? is the big question.
Yeah, but before we get onto that, what other types of questions do you get? Like, what are, yeah, tell me that. That might be of interest to people, because I'll tell you what the questions that I often get is, how can I get involved?
Yes, yes. Those are the two. We get two primary questions. One is, what is the alt-right? And one is a very excited, I want to do something. How can I help? I'm new to this. And it's like this awakening for people, and they're just desperate to have something to do to help. Those are the two big ones. We get some trolls, which we just generally, you know, we don't even bother responding in any way. And a lot of people who, which is gratifying, that they came to know the alt-right because of our space. Because we are in, I'm sorry.
Yeah. What kind of, face of the alt-right does the alt-right page present to people? Cause obviously people can find the alt-right through a multitude of different ways. And you know, that kind of colors their initial perceptions of
right.
it. So how do you present the alt-right to people through that page?
Well, yeah, I guess I would say we present the alt-right in the only way that I see the alt-right, and that is as an admirable movement that has the answer to the disease of modernity that we're all living through. So,
nicely put.
I think that a lot of people, there are a lot of ways to find the alt-right. That's true. But there's only a lot of ways to find the alt-right by accident in a few ways, if you will. And I think a lot of people accidentally find the alt-right because of the alt-right Facebook page. And that's because of the way that Facebook is organized. Because on Facebook, if your friend, your quote, Facebook friend, comments on something, you will see that they have commented somewhere. So there are people who come to our page who don't even know what the alt-right is and only come because they got a notice in their notifications that their friend said, and then, you know, fill in the blank. And it was something interesting that their friend said. So they click over to our page. We have gotten a number of messages from people who have found us because of that. They weren't looking for us. They didn't know anything about the alt-right. The idea that the alt-right is found in a lot of ways is true, but I think for normies who are not looking for us, there are only a few ways, which is why we're so, why we think that the Facebook page is so valuable, because there are so few integrated spaces available anymore. Everything is so, well, like with the Twitter Holocaust that's going on, right? Like,
oh yeah, that's something that we were all very worried about.
Yeah. So when you're on Twitter, right, Twitter is a quote integrated space, you know, normie, like right, left, normies, it's just everybody. But really it's a very segregated space. There isn't a lot of interchange unless people are actively trolling the other side, if you will. But on Facebook, there are so many normies who don't even know about these social media brawls, if you will, you know, right, left, and all of this. They're just normal people just doing their thing. And then they find their friend either commenting. A lot of our posts are shared. And our posts are easy to share, if you will, because a lot of them it's almost like we curate the news from an alt-right perspective for the normies to share. So it just gets shared, and then people are like, oh, you know, then they click on it and they're like, oh, what's this? Like, you know, and it varies. We've done some really long pieces on like the state of South Africa because we wanted to get that idea out. It was really long. We had a woman who's followed the page for quite a long time, who lives in South Africa, sending us lots of information. And so we kind of did it to bring attention to that. But a lot of the things that we do, like our most recent post was just a picture of a bumper sticker that I saw. It's a dog bone, and it says, "I heart my grand dog." My grand dog. And yeah. And so it was just like, I just did a quick, you know, death of the West, you know, and it's been shared a bunch of times because people kind of resonate when they look around and they're like, what in the hell is going on? Right.
Yes. We kind of, that's a good example of the emptiness that a lot of people live with now.
Right.
And they sort of glorify it. They pretty it up with that sort of humor. But ultimately it is speaking of, well, loneliness.
Yes, fair. I mean, to another generation, into the grandparent generation. It is, I think that the alt-right has the answer to why that's happening. And when normies who, you know, we have a truth that everybody knows, everybody in their marrow, if you will, knows what our truth is, but it has not been permitted. Our truth has not been permitted to be known to be true for several decades now. Like all we're permitted to know is modernity. That's it. So people know, like when they see "I heart my grand dog" on some old lady's, you know, like a Toyota or whatever, they look at that and they think, what's wrong here? I know that there's something wrong, but they don't have the framework anymore to understand what's wrong. And the alt-right...
No.
Gives you the framework.
Yes, indeed. The interesting thing is that certainly for me, and I think for many, many people, when you're younger, when I was younger, I just assumed that the left had the answer to this. The left had a sort of framework in place that would explain all of this and provide solutions for it. And eventually you realise not only that that's not going to happen, but in fact it is the left's framework which is precisely accelerating all of this. And the left actually has no... the left today, if we're talking about the sort of active left that has influence in society, not, you know, fringe groups, the established left today is totally in bed with corporations that will move jobs across to the other side of the world, for example.
And the right has the same framework. You know, alternative, right? Right? Like that's why we need the alt-right, because everything that you've just said about the left is the same for the right, except that the right makes it possibly even more difficult for people to understand the reality of what's going on in the world, because they have these like these little slivers, if you will, of truth, but then their foundation is rotten. So they'll say, like, the left will say, like, oh, Islam is a religion of peace. But the right will say, well, you know, radical Islam is a problem. But so it's kind of like people who are on the right look at that framework. They're like, yes, Islam is causing many problems for this society. But because of the way that the right frames it, we never see it as this is an incompatible people's problem, which is how the alt-right frames it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I've said, I said in the Erkenbrand speech, the right today is fine with us being replaced as long as it happens peacefully.
Right.
And that is just insane. It's mad. This is a system that, that's the right. That's the right wing. You know, because they're in love with the idea of the Constitution and whatever.
Right.
So
right.
In America and in Britain and Europe, it's that we're in love with our values. You know, it's the same language. It's different language used to mean the same thing.
Right.
You know, the system is that we've created, or our ancestors created, is so good. It's that it's so important that it's more important than us. So if we perish, that's fine. As long as the values remain, that's just madness.
That whole idea of the values, that is, I think, such a pivotal truth that the alt-right, still holds. I mean, and I say still because, like you said, this is an ancestral understanding that we have, that it isn't these, you know, in these bodiless propositions and values that just kind of float in the, you know, float in the cosmos, that they're connected to us as a people. And when people, normies, start to understand that these values are not universal, that these values are them, right? This is like, did you see that Black Pigeon Speaks? He just had a little tweet, and it was the Canadian immigration minister talking about female genital mutilation. Did you happen to see that?
No, actually.
It was really interesting. He didn't, Black Pigeon Speaks didn't have anything really that I saw in that tweet anyway. He didn't tweet anything out specifically about it. It was just this little video clip. And for me, it's such a prime illustration of the right versus the alt-right. The conservatives quote, you know, this is a lot of our normies on the alt-right Facebook page that come in are the conservatives, the GOP basic conservatives. And Black Pigeon Speaks had this little video, and it is some Canadian woman who is on some board asking the immigration minister of Canada about some kind of change to what is or is not going to be included in the, quote, Canadian values that will permit you to be a citizen. And the Canadian immigration minister is refusing. He's skirting the question over and over and over again of whether female genital mutilation will be removed as a against Canadian values. And the Canadian immigration minister is Somali. You know, I mean, like, obviously
oh
he has,
God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously
yeah. Okay.
He has a Canadian passport, right? And obviously, you know, according to the civic nationalists, well, he's Canadian. You know, we're just waiting for him to take on Canadian values. But he doesn't, quote, take on Canadian values because he has Somali values. And so here he was sitting looking, you know, he was wearing the Canadian values suit, you know, like he and speaking, you know, beautiful English and all of these Canadian values while he is while he is obviously avoiding saying that female genital mutilation. It was also very interesting because he kept saying that, well, we need to consult with the community. We need to consult with the community, something like that. And I kept thinking, well, the community, and she could, well, what community is it that you need to consult with? And I'm like, this people is why the right needs an alternative. Because according to the right, this Somali, because he speaks beautiful English, because he has a suit on, because he works in the government, because he has a passport, all of these things. Now look, he is magically Canadian. But you know what? Female genital mutilation is something that is a Somali value. And here he is in Canada with his Somali values, because the right will tell you that a place makes the people. No, the people come to the place and they remain themselves. They're not interested in becoming somebody else. I mean, who wants to become somebody else? And they will only assimilate, which is what the right is always yelling about. They'll only assimilate if they have to be successful somewhere. And they don't have to be anything other than who they are when they create their little miniature Somalia or miniature whatever, fill in the blank, when they go into European nations, old and new world European nations. So the fact that we know that values is, you know, it is a myth. You know, we are people. We're people with values. We are not values. So that's why we need
indeed.
The alt-right.
Indeed. And I've gone into this in several videos this year. I don't know if I ever did it before this year, but the politicians are crowing about values, especially this year. After every terror attack, they do it, you know, which in itself is telling. It's something that I've spoken about. And basically, I think it's our mistake to reduce a nation to values.
Certainly.
For various reasons. Because, first of all, the people, I mean, what's it all about? Ultimately, this is all about people, surely.
Right.
And the people are more important than any values that you might attach to them. That they are the matter at hand. The matter at hand is not values, it's
right.
People. And also, values change. It's very, and also the values that we supposedly subscribe to now, a lot of us don't. And then the other thing is that if you're going to reduce a nation to values, then you have to admit that most other nations probably hold the same or espouse the same values. I mean, I saw some awful clip of a British politician, some woman, I've no idea who she was, on Question Time, which is a terrible program, political discussion program in Britain. And she was saying that, you know, just the usual claptrap, the usual spiel. She was coming out about our values, which are tolerance and open-mindedness and what was the other one? Diversity. Well, for how long has diversity even been a word that the common man knew, let alone been something that he believed in? That's just nonsense. That's like 30 years at the most, I would say. This is not something that defines our nation.
And with those lines, I saw, I believe it was in The Guardian, that there was an article that said that Britons needed to start integrating with the migrant populations. That integration, and I think by integration, what we say in America is assimilation. It would be a synonym, it seemed like. That assimilation or integration was not just a one-way street. That we need to start assimilating or integrating with the migrant populations. And if you look at, like, from a right, you know, a conservative, values-oriented, civic nationalist idea, then that makes perfect sense. Because once you have London, which is now primarily non-white, then why not? Like, why should we not give up our values and take on the values of, you know, of Pakistanis?
Yeah, they are now the well, they're not the dominant group in London yet, but that is the point. You know, one day they will be, and we will be a minority. So it's impractical to say that they should conform to our values. Right.
And that's already
you know,
being
said. Even if we're going to, if we're going to go with the values thing, obviously.
Right, exactly.
It's impractical. So in the end, what happens is that people get dispossessed and deconstructed. And just left to the four winds, really. It's just terrible. But I do think that, sorry, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say that I think that that's, and normies see this. Like when I say normies, quite honestly, I really mean people who are either, you know, maybe like a liberal, classical liberal leaning right. I'm not talking about leftists. I'm not talking about social justice warriors. I'm not talking about that end of the spectrum. I'm talking about just normal people who go out, you know, and they're the sports ball watchers, right? So we have all of these people now who have loved the NFL, grew up, you know, with the NFL, and now they have this whole kneeling thing, which is kind of going by the wayside. But I don't think that it'll ever go by the wayside for the normies who have been confused by it, you know, because it's always couched in these terms which are untrue, right? It's couched in terms of, oh, it's about patriotism, it's about the national anthem, but really, it's a racial issue. A racial issue, and yeah. we need to frame it for them so that they understand that it's a racial issue. And I know several normies from our page who became alt-right because of our framing, our correct framing of the NFL issue. You know, they understood that something more was going on than, you know, some people are not patriotic.
Well, but once every time I've seen a photo of the kneeling, you know, the NFL and all that, it's always black people.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen one of the white players or the white cheerleaders kneeling. So
they
it
have,
seems to me that,
but it's but
have
it's
they
a
done
black
it? No.
It's a black led. Yes, I mean they have, and you know, different white team owners have come out, et cetera, et cetera. But everybody knows that this is a black led movement, a black led protest, and that they're these
exactly.
are white allies, kind of a thing. Whether a handful of white players are doing it, everybody understands, even people who don't understand it as a black-white thing, everybody understands that it's the black players who are leading the charge.
Then you've got the leap to saying, well, okay, this is because black people are a group. They are a people in themselves, and we are a people in ourselves. And I think this is the thing that normies don't dare to understand.
Right.
You know, they obviously instinctively must see that if it's a black led thing, it's black people who are doing it. It's for their own interests. They're serving their own interests. So the question of groups, human groups, obviously comes into that. But they daren't take it to its logical conclusion and think, well, if they're defying us, then there must be an us.
Right. And the right has been so, I think that the right has been even more detrimental to our people's interests than the left, quite honestly, because it does obscure that idea. The right, you know, the left has been saying for decades, identity politics, identity politics, identity politics, for everybody else but white people. The right has been saying nobody should have identity politics. The most noble good that we are in a journey to, that we will evolve into, is the beauty of a colorblind society. And so the right, people who are on the right, look around and they think it's just like these strange fringe people of color, I mean, fringe, you know, it's like the fringe crazies who are into identity politics. Because they have been fed a steady diet that nobody wants, you know, we're all raised on a steady diet of Martin Luther King's speech, you know, to, I have a dream of being judged by the content of my character, not the color of my skin. I mean, that is like almost like a catechism for people on the right in America anyway. So
yeah. And it definitely, and then that was exported to Europe as well. I think this racial egalitarianism, I think that started, it was sort of first implemented in America in the 60s, I guess.
In Europe, is the idea that the ultimate goal is to be colorblind? Is that the idea there? That's the goal of civilized society is to be completely colorblind?
Yeah, basically it is. But the thing is, I wish that people would question, what do we actually get from being colorblind? And what do we even get? I mean, I went into this, I think it was with either Black Pigeon or Lovely Porridge yesterday. What do we actually get at the end of all this? We get mixed race descendants who are not going to be us. They're not going to be recognizably, you know, connected to us. And they're going to be lower IQ than us. So that's the end. That's what happens if we are tolerant.
So well, and the
not
thing,
really a prize worth, you know.
And I think that we have been, white people have been so robbed by that idea that, of the goal of being colorblind. Because, I mean, I certainly, you know, I mean, I know that there's been a lot of talk recently on Twitter about the idea, and you had such a beautiful tweet, I can't remember it, but it was such a beautiful idea that, you know, we need to understand that even people on the alt-right, that all of us, even those who are revolting against this modern hellscape that we're living in, that all of us have been raised in modernity, and that none of us have been unscarred or unaffected by what we've been living in. And I think that a big part of that modernity is that we have been denied, white people anyway, have been denied our racial identity. And when you finally recognize that I'm not this hyper individualized rootless atom that's just floating along alone, that when you realize that you are part of a people that has been here for millennia, and that you are here because of the sacrifices of those who came before you, and that you are living in the greatest, most humane, most civilized civilization that has ever existed, that it's because of people, not because of propositions that, you know, created it out of thin air, and that you want to be better for your people now, and you want to be better for your people in the future. And that when you realize that, it's so beautiful. And that's something that we've been robbed as. So I mean, I'm not even looking at color. I'm looking at this idea that we should all be in this colorblind march towards being colorblind as a total separation from something that is deep in our souls. I'm not even thinking about like IQ and all these other things, which are important. I'm just thinking about how much, what a robbing of part of our humanity it's been, that we're told that we are just, we're just no one.
Yeah.
You know?
Indeed. This is the thing. It shouldn't be necessary for us to defend ourselves on the basis of our civilizational achievements.
No.
Or to say that we have compassion, or we have creativity, or we have IQ. You know, those are things, those are secondary things. The first thing is that we are a people. We are, there is an us. And you know what? All these other peoples are perfectly able and perfectly allowed to have pride in their group identity without any of those achievements.
Surely.
You know,
yeah,
so
surely.
It's an absurd situation.
Well, it's like,
I suppose, yeah, you go.
I was just thinking, Richard Spencer, one of his, I think it was a Texas A&M event that he had, somebody in the Q&A said something just snarky about, you know, white supremacy, or, you know, you think you're so supreme or something. And he said something to the effect of, like, even if my people were not a great people, they're still my people. They don't have to be a great people. They just have to be mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that's very much worth saying. Apart from anything else, it makes it more human. You know, it makes it more warm and compassionate, which I think will appeal to a very large percentage of the public. If instead they see us going on and on about racial IQ differences and crime statistics, that just looks, it looks negative. It looks like we're being hateful and looking for problems, looking for flaws in these other groups. And then, of course, it also opens up the whole question about whether it's culture and education and racism that mm-hmm. makes these other groups dysfunctional. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that we should completely avoid that stuff because it is very pertinent. But I think the first thing that we should assert is that we, it's the simple fact of peoplehood.
Right.
Because then people are more amenable to those things anyway. once they understand that they do actually have membership of a group which in itself is an entity. And, you know, this has been said many times, nobody really cares about the attributes of an endangered animal species. They only care that it is endangered. And yeah, they get very excited about that. But then, of course, there is another problem. You know, if you go for that argument, then the left will say, well, white people aren't an endangered species, so what are you worrying about? And, well, then you've got to start talking about, well, other things. You know, there are increasing rates of mixed marriages, or at least miscegenation. And it's still, I think it's about 10% now. But, you know, that's a lot bloody higher than it was 10 years ago. So even that is, that's a threat. The higher birth rates are a threat in our own countries. So, yeah, we're not endangered in one sense, but in another sense, we absolutely are endangered.
I think that when you have a high-ranking government official in Canada talking about how, or excuse me, the implication, the necessary implication of his position is that Somali values of female genital mutilation are going to be becoming Canadian values, or at least at this point not considered in contradiction to Canadian values, that you can't, at the same time that you're having that conversation, you can't also say that white nations are not endangered. You can't have both of those conversations. It's one or the other.
Yeah, indeed. And the only way to resolve that for a liberal would be to say that, well, okay, but no one's saying that you should FGM your daughter or something, so you can just opt out of it. But even that's a naive thing, because eventually it will become mandatory. And the more Somalis there are, then the more they're just going to impose that stuff. So, you know, why are we even talking about entertaining them, these ideas, in the first place? It's because these people have become numerous in our societies.
Right. And they've become numerous as themselves. They haven't become numerous as new Canadians. They've become numerous as Somalis in Canada, which is the civic nationalists. It's like they cover their eyes and then they just start shouting hysterically that people need to assimilate and that people need to come here illegally, right? That, like, that's what all of the people on the right are always yelling.
It's so pathetic because for two reasons. First, you can say, okay, then when's this assimilation going to start? Right. And how are you going to enforce it upon ever-increasing numbers of them? And the second thing is about legal immigration. What difference does it actually make? I don't understand why people have this obsession. I just want them to come here legally. As if that makes any difference. Your grandkids are still going to be outnumbered by them, you idiot.
I think I have figured out, at least in America, why people are always yelling about legal immigration. I think I figured it out. And I think it's because the civic nationalist, although I believe that they believe themselves to be sincere, I do not think that they are intentionally misleading others when they are shouting all the time about illegal or versus legal immigration. But it's their way of accepting the truth and the necessity of ethno-nationalism while maintaining the language and civility of what's considered civil, you know, what's considered a civil idea or legitimate idea of, well, we should have many immigrants, we're a nation of immigrants, but they need to come here legally, is because they know, an American knows when they go through, especially small town America, and every storefront has now a hand-painted thing, a sign in Spanish, that all of the little shops in the small town, rural small town, are closed. Now we've got used tire shops and tiendita Mexican groceries, because that town has been taken over by cheap agricultural labor. That when a civic nationalist goes through and sees that not only have they not assimilated, but that they have overcome the American town, they know that it's because many, many, many immigrants become the nation where you are, or excuse me, not the nation, the country where you are. So if they're always shouting against illegal immigration, what it really is they're shouting against a large number of immigrants coming, because they will not accept the truth, but they know the truth in their heart that too many of them means no more of us, but yes, they don't want to say it.
Yeah. So they're hoping that by pushing for legal, purely legal immigration, they'll greatly reduce the numbers coming in. Two problems with that, however, two reasons that's short-sighted. First, if you stopped it completely now, they would still outnumber us in a few generations' time because of their kid. And the second problem with it is, oh God, I've forgotten what the second problem with it is. They're probably on the cultural issue. They'll still insist on their own culture anyway.
And that makes perfect sense.
Oh, I've remembered. What the other problem with it is. The left. Yeah, this is a good one. And the left will simply change. They'll simply change it so that they can all become legal.
Oh right. Yep. Amnesty. That's all we talk about over here.
Or what Merkel did. They can all come and they'll all be legal because I've said so.
Right.
So that completely cuts, what's the term? There's an expression for this. It sort of cuts the feet out from under the civic nationalist who's going on about legal immigration. Well, then once it becomes legal, you've got no complaint left to make.
And I hope that the civic nationalists will start to accept the reality that they see. It's so difficult. And this is, I think, human nature. I think human nature is to want to know the truth, but to also accept what is being told to you is the truth. I think that there's,
yes.
I think that there's only a narrower population of people who will seek the truth and allow a truth that does not fit the framework that they have been told is the truth. Which is, I think, how you become alt-right. You know, like, I've been told, you know, throughout my life that, you know, the United States of America is founded on liberty, justice, freedom, democracy, my constitution, etc. Right? But when you start really seeing that that's not the reality, then you either accept it or you're confused. The alt-right, once you permit the framework of truth to frame your world, you're not confused anymore. And I think that that's what the normies are having a problem with. Everybody's looking around feeling shell-shocked. They're confused. Every time they see some, like, you know, brawl at the mall or some, you know, all of their township is now in, you know, Spanish and English, or, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. And they look around, or, you know, now we have to call men who mutilate themselves women, et cetera. They look around and they're very confused by what's happened, but it's because they don't have the framework of truth. They only have the framework of either the left or of the right. Neither of which
is the left.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, exactly. As you said earlier, the right's framework today is the left's framework from 10 years ago.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the way I always phrase it. And there really is no, the right is just a dying, perpetually dying creature. the mainstream right. And I think it's just useless. I mean, again, this is why the alt-right is needed.
Right.
One other thing that someone said in the live chat regarding legal immigration is that inevitably, when governments select immigrant groups to make legal immigrants, to, you know, to invite, to allow in through, you know, with the correct papers and all that, it's high IQ immigrants. And this is another sort of separate issue. And I got into this with my Sargon hangout, which you won't, most of you won't be able to see because it's not allowed in most of Europe now. It's been banned. But if you're American, you'll be able to see it. And somebody has the relevant section as a separate video on their own channel. So just look for this. So the issue is, if you have high IQ immigrants, now Faith Goldie also just did a video about this as well. Okay, so you're not being outnumbered. And they're not, they're probably not going to have loads of kids, but they affect the native or whatever, the dominant group, the previously dominant group, in a different way, which is, I think, demoralization. Because then you, what the result of it is, you start seeing that the, you know, the good jobs, the high positions in your society are occupied by people who are not your people.
Mm.
And so that ends up breeding a sense of, well, an inferiority complex, or if not that, then resentment and suspicion, as it really, as it should.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right. And I said this to Sargon, but you know, I've spoken about this already. I said to him, they're going to outcompete us. The high IQ Indians, high IQ Ashkenazi Jews, East Asians, and so on, they're going to outcompete us at these higher levels. And he said, yeah, but I don't recognize an us. That was his thing.
Mm.
And, you know, I just think that's totally dishonest. I think he's lying to himself.
But then again,
he is operating in the framework of, you know, modern society, the left and the right.
And I think that your addition of the word himself is what's imperative. Like, it's not that Sargon is lying, right? I mean, he believes what he's saying. He's lying to himself, you know, because he really can't, under the framework that we are permitted, you know, this colorblind, raceless framework that white people are permitted to have. That's the only thing that he can think. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense in his framework. Is to say, well, there is no us, so that's okay. You know?
Yeah. But there must be a lot of cognitive dissonance involved in believing that, you know, like doublethink, because obviously white people do exist.
And I can't tell you how many conversations on the alt-right Facebook page, like we don't do, James and I, we don't have a lot of time, quite honestly, to kind of do comment battle, if you will. We have a lot of projects on our own outside of the page. So we don't do a lot of comment interaction, which is, you know, unfortunate, because so much, as we know, so much can be done within the comments. But we have had a lot of comments from white people who are sincerely do not believe that that we are people, you know? And so it's just this constant illumination to them, or attempt to illuminate to them, that you are a people, you know, we are a people. And that's what's always, you know, that's going to be one of our main pushes on the whatisthealtright.com, is answering some of these basic mythologies that are used against us, you know, that we are a people.
One thing that occurs to me just now is, it's very interesting that, to think about the different generations, because you can understand millennials having this attitude, and even Generation Z, the teenagers today, you can understand them not understanding, not recognizing that they are of a people, because they have been surrounded by other races all their lives. But for the baby boomers, and I don't want to go on another attack on the baby boomers, but I'm just saying it's interesting that they fall for this as well, because surely their childhoods were basically white. You know, the neighborhoods they grew up in were a world away from, I mean, if I think of Edinburgh or Glasgow today, they're multiracial cities. Any baby boomer, any person in their 60s who lives there must remember that 50 years ago, when they were a child, it was totally, totally different. And yet they still fall for this thing about, well, who are we? What's British? What's Scottish?
Right. I think, I know at least here in the United States that assuredly the baby boomer population was filled with the same propaganda ideas that they are not a people and that the United States of America was not, you know, I wrote something up for the new site, something like, you know, people are taught that the Constitution rolled up its sleeves and pulled the wagon on its way to Oregon out of the mud after Mrs. Constitution died from exhaustion and Constitution Junior got killed in an Indian raid. Like they think that the Constitution did everything, that the values did everything. I mean, that is a really long-standing idea here, that it's not people, and we're not a people. We're just ideas on paper.
Do you think that World War II factors into this? Let's briefly talk about the baby boomers. I'm convinced that for them, the foundation stone of their identity is the Holocaust and the fact that, well, America went over and sorted it all out. And Britain as well. I mean, it's the same for British people of that age.
Have you seen Black Pigeon Speaks Foundation Myths video?
Yes, I thought it was fantastic.
That, for me, was the final piece in trying to understand how our nation shifted. And by our nation, I mean like our white nation, like our people, like nation as in race, blood, you know, that like that all of us totally shifted from a belief that we're good people creating good society into what we are, which we're a very inherently evil people that have done evil things and need to be, under a constant state of repairing the evil that we've done. That I didn't know how we went from one to the other until I watched Black Pigeon Speaks Foundation Myths video. And for me, that was the linchpin. That's what I couldn't understand. And that his idea that World War II and changing all of our foundations from the original foundation myths to now we're all foundationed on the Holocaust and World War II. That I can't express that. I think every single person needs to watch that video.
Yeah, it's a very, very good video. I think he did that one about 2 or 3 months ago now, and it's a very good one. So let's get on to the subject of the website that you're now, or is there anything more that you'd like to say about the Facebook page?
Well, the Facebook page is the page that's most valuable to us, to James and I. Like this .com that we have just created, actually we created because of something that you said. Several months ago when we were talking about this hangout and you said you just asked in passing, like really with an assumption of truth that, well, what are you going to do when Facebook throws you off, you know? And it was kind of this jarring question for me. And when I posed it to James, it was kind of jarring to him too, because we are naive in a lot of ways in that, you know, well, truth will win out. And we're always true and we're always reasonable. Like, why would we get thrown off? You know, we're not crazy.
So yeah, well, Janet Taylor just got thrown off Twitter.
The very first purge, you know, the epitome of civility and reasonability, right? And it was his video, the very first video that got quarantined on YouTube was just him giving hate facts. You know, it's like not even ideological at all. Yeah. It's just like, here are facts. So that's why we started the whatisthealtright.com, because we want to build it as a place that normies can go to have an answer to that question that we get almost daily. What is the alt-right? But we're hoping that we live on for as long as possible on Facebook because of what I was saying before, that anybody can find us and you don't have to be looking. It's just a beautiful place, really, to get a new message out. So that's what we want to continue doing with the Facebook page. But we, you know, because we have got to be pragmatic, we're going to build this whatistthealtright.com and start shilling for it on the Facebook page as a place, you know, where people can go and get the real information too, which, you know, when I came into the alt-right, I stumbled onto the alt-right. I wasn't even looking. It was an absolute mistake of the cosmos that I even found the alt-right. I wasn't looking. And when I found it, it was, I guess it was like Hillary Clinton's speech that made the alt-right a household name or started it on its path to being a household name. But when I found it, you know, 4 years ago now, it was not a household name. And which was good in that there were not a bunch of like BuzzFeed articles telling me what the alt-right is. Yes. But it was difficult because I had to wade through so much conversation that people were having on YouTube, podcasts, you know, the Amren site, Red Ice. Nobody was worried about giving a specific definition of what is the alt-right, because really at that time it was still evolving into what it was.
Yeah.
But now that we have solidified a lot more, especially since the alt-right schism, if you will, and because there are so many people claiming to tell the world what the alt-right is, and most of those people either don't know or know that they don't know and are creating absolute fabrications in order to discredit us. And so I want to make sure that there is a space where somebody who has done the work and has been around, you know, as the evolution has happened, that I'm trying to, and James is trying to tell people in a way that they can understand what the alt-right is, because it is confusing and because there are so many people now trying to sabotage the alt-right by lying about what the alt-right is. But it's so important that our message get out, because we have the only answer. We have the only answer to help people understand what's going on and to help them to reclaim good. That is ultimately for me what the alt-right is. The alt-right is a reclamation of good, and people need to know what it is.
That's a really good summation. So let's get to the website, the whatistthealtright.com website. Tell me how it works. You were talking about myths, sort of exploding common myths.
Well, when you go, it is brand new. It literally, we just finished it, I think, the day before yesterday. And by finished it, I mean just our goal for putting it live to the world was that the very basic foundational understandings that you have to have of what the alt-right is were on there, okay? So we have articles that we have labeled as alt-right primer, or primer, if you prefer. And there's an article on nationalism, which deals with what globalism, civic nationalism, and ethno-nationalism are. It's really quite long. It is problematic how long it is, but it's a big topic. Right. I tried to write it in a way that clarified it to people and explained to people, you know, what each of those was, and that really ethno-nationalism is the only nationalism. There's an article on race. I'm trying to think, an article on Western civilization and cultural Marxism. People don't understand what cultural Marxism is, that it's an actual school of thought coming from an actual academic body of scholars, and that they have an actual plan. So I have also tried to incorporate lots of high quality videos. So there's like, there are two videos there on cultural Marxism, for instance, where you can watch a 7-minute video and it'll give you the background of cultural Marxism. I've also included a really high quality full length documentary on cultural Marxism. We've tried to create in that website, high quality, truthful answers in an understandable way of what are the foundational, pivotal alt-right ideas, which was in itself hard because when everything exploded and the alt-light schism happened, there was so much argument of like, well, I'm gonna make this video or I'm gonna write this article, and there are only three things which are essential to being alt-right, and they were always three different things. You know, like, it just depended on who you asked, right? It, like, everybody knew that there was only one or two or three, but they were always different. So coming up with what we thought was essential, like, and we also said in there, and I will keep hammering this point, and I think that anybody in the alt-right would agree with this, that there are, because we're countercultural, and because we are all, as you so beautifully said, we are all affected by modernity, that nobody comes into the alt-right fully formed. It's a process. Only in a movie is the red pill a moment, okay? This is a process, and that if you come into the alt-right and you see all of these different things and you say, oh, that makes so much sense, now I understand, fill in the blank, and then you come to something that's really uncomfortable for you or something that you do not agree with at all, just take a breath. And continue on. By all means, maintain your own idea, your own position, but just keep reading. Because you may, as every single person that I personally know who identifies as alt-right, including myself, the evolution is a process, and you may, in a year, in 2 years, in 3 years, however long, you may look back and think, oh, I really did not know that that was the truth. And that truth was really uncomfortable for me then. And I didn't think it was a truth because I just couldn't, I just couldn't frame it that way. So that's another part of what we're trying to do, is to allow people to know these things are going to be hard for you because you have been lied to. You've been lied to all your life. And this is the truth, and it's difficult, and just take a breath and you'll get through it.
Yeah. And there are many people to help you through it as well.
Yes.
That's an important thing nowadays.
And
yeah, our numbers grow.
Yes. And I think because all of us understand A, the imperative nature of the truth that we hold, and B, that we didn't always, we weren't always able to hold all those truths. I know the people that I know, they, you know, when they say, what can I do? What can I do? What they want to do is help. And they are so, they're just hungry to help other people to chew the truth because it is such an intense recognition. And they want to help. People will help you. If you're an Nordy and you're listening, people will help you. And if they don't want to help you, the next person will want to help you.
Indeed. So I think that this has been very interesting. Are there any other things you'd like to say about normie outreach, as you said at the start?
I think that people need to recognize that when you are reaching out, that's what you're doing. You're not pulling in. You're not like going and grabbing somebody and pulling them to where you are. You are reaching out to where they are. And so if you start talking to somebody, like, you can't, you know, you can't run around and just be screaming at everybody all these truths that you now hold. It's not going to work. You know, it just is not going to work. You have to meet people where they are and then help them along. But if you ever want to, that's what you have to do in order to be effective, because nobody wants to be dragged to where you are. That's what I would say, that we have to, patience is difficult, but we have to be patient.
Yeah. I think it's difficult for some people to understand this. For one reason is that a lot of people are in the alt-right came from 4chan and the, you know, equivalent things. And there the tone is very harsh and brutal.
Right.
And the, you know, the truth is just delivered in the coldest terms. And so they think, well, it worked for me, so I should just continue in the same vein with people I meet. On whichever website and in whichever situation in real life, you know, barring legal ramifications, I should just give them the cold hard truth. And if they can't handle it, then they're weak.
Right.
But, well, what would you say about that?
I would say that that's pretty autistic. Quite honestly, I would say that that is also extremely selfish. Because that is, it makes you feel good to do what it is that you can do. I understand that. Like, I know, for instance, when Identity Europa first started, you know, first started, I understand that they have the many troubles now, but I'm talking about when Identity Europa first started and they were really the first group that you could kind of join up with. And my husband and I were very excited. We're like, oh, this new group is going to be so fantastic. And we considered joining up and realized that that's not going to be the best use of our position, right? Our position is not going to be best used by joining with a, you know, ostensibly, everybody knows this, fringe group, and start telling people about a fringe group we're part of. You know, like, we need to use our position where we are to, we have the social capital in our sphere, and we need to use that. And what I really wanted to do was just join up with Identity Europa and go and, like, paper everywhere, you know, like, and invite people to talks and do all these amazing things, because that would be a lot more gratifying for me, because I was, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? I was in that position. But that is not what would have been best for our people, because the people that I needed to reach, because of the position that I'm in, the people that I needed to reach are not going to be reached by that kind of activism. The people that I know that I'm going to reach are reached by an activism that is much more personal and much more focused on interpersonal relationship. And that wasn't very, that's not always gratifying, but you know what? It's not about me, right? It's about helping our people. So I need to do what I can do to help our people. And although it might be gratifying to go in, you know, with a Molotov cocktail and just like firebomb a whole room 4chan style, is that really going to be that? Look at your sphere. And, you know, there are some spheres that people are involved in that might work. And if that's the case, then by all means, firebomb away. But if you look around and your sphere needs a totally different tact, you need to use the tact that your personal sphere, because you're the only one who has your sphere to red pill. There are so few of us. We need to use ourselves really wisely, not selfishly.
Yeah, I think those are very wise words. Just for the sake of any clearing up any ambiguity, you are not advocating literally Molotov cocktails.
Oh, that
was a figure
no.
of speech.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you got to be careful.
I forget the world we're living in. Yes, please excuse me. I was not saying that if a Molotov cocktail would actually work. I'm saying that if an intense conversation where you are laying out really difficult, heavy truth in a really hard way, in the way that 4chan works, in your sphere, if that kind of hardness works, be hard. But that's not the kind of sphere most of us live in, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Oh no, I'm really covering myself, to be honest.
And myself too. So yes, that was an absolute just common language analogy.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry about it. So one question that was asked in the chat is, and I don't know if you'll, yeah. Oh God, there's another question from the same guy, but okay, I'll just ignore that. Okay. How can more women be brought into the alt-right? when the media presents pride as hate, and what do you see? Well, okay, let's. Well, what do you see as the place of women in the movement? Because he thinks that most women probably don't want to be very prominent. So what do you see as the place of women in the movement? Let's tackle that one first.
Well, I think the place for women in the movement, while it is a movement, if you will, you know, before we win, I think that that women need to look to themselves to do what it is. And this goes for men and for women, although I am definitely think that men and women are extremely different as we were designed. I am a Christian and I believe that God designed us differently. That every person needs to look at what gifts and talents they have. And so there really isn't a position for women, if you will, like there isn't a position for men. But I think that women and men naturally gravitate towards different things. Like I don't think that women gravitate to leadership positions when they are in a healthy relationship with their womanhood. Men are leaders, and women, there's something so, now I'm sorry that I'm kind of going off into a tangent, but you know, feminism and then the male equivalent of like the MGTOWs and all of these people, you know, all of these things of modernity that have messed up the natural balance of the genders impacts us also. But I think that many women in the alt-right have a better understanding of the true beauty and health of the relationship between men and women and how we're different. And because of that, I don't think that if you look around, there are no women trying to lead the movement, you know, like they're.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that in and of itself, the fact that there isn't like a Merkel trying to like create, you know, some big organization or big rallies or all these different things is because women want to help. That's how we're made. Right. And to say that we can't help, especially when you're talking about people that we love, that is in contradiction to who women are. So I think that women need to help. And I think that men need to lead because that's how God made us. And the way that women can help is by looking at how God made you as a woman. And what your gift is. You know, I have gifts that are different than other women. And I figured out how to use them to help. And I've been around for a few years now, and this is the first time that I'm making any kind of public statement at all. And I'm doing that on behalf of the Alt-Right Facebook page. And James isn't doing it because James has a full-time job and lives in another hemisphere, and it's the middle of the night there. So here I am.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you're doing a good job, so why not? But the other thing I wanted to ask, and well, the questioner asked, is how can more women be brought into the alt-right, especially considering that the media presents pride as hate?
I think that women will come to the alt-right because women are... because women are mothers and because women are wives, or women want to be wives and mothers. And those who don't think that they want to be a wife or a mother are lying to themselves, because we have been lied to. So I think that if you couch the alt-right as the, I wouldn't use this term. I'm going to use this term because we're kind of talking in a company that will understand this term, but it is a term that has been maligned in modernity. You know, we understand patriarchy. We understand that that men protect women and that men love women and that men want their women and their children to be safe. And when women look out onto the landscape and see that women and children are not safe, they want to be safe. And they especially want their children to be safe. For anybody who's a mother, which I am. And I think that couching the alt-right as a way to reclaim good to reclaim a time when your children could go outside and ride their bicycle. You know, that's what the alt-right is looking to reclaim. We're not even looking to do anything new. We're looking to do something old, and something that is very old but hasn't been gone for very long. You know, we're all victimized by this idea that, you know, like you were saying before, diversity has always been a value. Hell no, it hasn't. I mean, diversity is just is a brand new terminology that's been forced on us. Explaining that the alt-right is a reclamation of what we've always known was good, I think is the way to get women involved, because they know that what we have now is not good. So how are we going to make it good? And we're going to make it good by reclaiming what was good. And who's reclaiming it? The alt-right is.
Yeah. There's one other question somebody's just asked, and then we'll wrap up. Do you believe our enemies have deliberately targeted white women in order to derail our community? Or is it merely a natural progression of modernity?
Can you repeat
the
question?
I don't know if this
question,
is referring please? Do you believe our enemies have deliberately targeted white women in order to derail our community, the alt-right?
I don't know. I would not say no, because one thing that, like I was saying earlier, I still, in a great extent, am naive. And I still am shocked a lot of the time, even though my shock is short, because then I have the framework to know why something is. So I'm not going to say no, because we've seen things that have been done to our people that are planned, that are designed, and that are evil. So, you know, like, if you look into the plan of the EU and the Kalergi plan to replace us, that was a plan. That's been a plan that was, you know, he was writing about it in the 1920s, I think, maybe 1930s, but not that long ago. But it was designed there by an architect, and that is an evil that's been done to our people. So would I say that there's no plan to upset the relationship between men and women of our people? I'm not going to say that. I wouldn't be surprised by it, to tell you the truth. But do I know? Certainly I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add before we finish?
No, I don't think so. I'm glad that you had me on. I really appreciate it. And I hope that we can keep bringing the normies in.
Oh, absolutely. Can you see the text chat on the right-hand side?
Oh, let me look. I have a habit of closing my computer if I'm looking at it. So I haven't been looking at it so that I don't accidentally cut off our chat. You know what? I can't see it.
Oh, just press the blue at the top right, the blue speech bubble button.
Ah, I see. Thank you. Okay, yes. Do you want to end by saying the 14 words? We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. And yes.
Okay. All right, excellent. I just wondered. I thought you would. All right, thank you very much. That's Clarion from the Alt-Right Facebook page and whatistthealtright.com. So that was great. I think that went well. And I think, yeah.
Can I add one thing? I think that the thing that the alt-right has that is the only true nationalism is that every people needs a 14 words. The Somali who wants to talk about female genital mutilation in Canada, he needs the 14 words too in Somalia. Every person, right?
That's the key thing in Somalia.
Every person should, you know, we are the only people, everybody else has been taught for decades that they need to embrace their people, that they need to build their communities, that they need to support their communities, that they need to strengthen their communities, so on and so forth. Take all of the true language that has been, you know, for at least 60 years now, right? To all non-white populations, we need to apply those same true and good messages to our people. And so the Somali needs to say, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for Somali children. The Somali needs to say that. And we need to say the same thing, because we are our people. And
the thing is that there's nothing to stop him from saying that. And nobody would be outraged if he said at all. Whether he said it in Somali or a lot of people would be overjoyed if he said it in Canada.
Of course. Right.
And that's so the thing.
We need to be able, you know, I think that people need to we have truth. Okay. We have the truth. I understand that there are people in situations and in positions that at this point it is extremely personally, it would be an extreme personal sacrifice for them to speak truth boldly. I speak truth boldly because the sacrifice that I would make is not the same as, say, a man who is supporting his family working in Silicon Valley, right? But everybody needs to speak some kind of truth. And if you have the lifestyle, you have the opportunity, you have the position where the sacrifice that you're going to make is maybe social ostracism, which would be my sacrifice, right? I was, you know, before coming on here, I started feeling like a little bit trepidatious about, I am very forthright in my personal sphere, that I am very, I'm pro-white, that I love my people. I talk to my friends and cohort about our people, which I think is a very powerful thing to talk about, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not closeted or whatever the phraseology would be, but to come out as forthright as this, like, you know, this is more forthright. And I was talking to an alt-right friend of mine, a personal friend, and he said, why don't you worry less about what your normie sphere will think and more about what your family thinks? And so I think that we also need to hold on to that there's going to be a sacrifice that we all have to make, but that we should all, even though it's not considered appropriate for our people to say the 14 words, whereas every other people has been told to say the 14 words, we still need to say it. And the more of us who say it, the more it will make it easier and safer for others to say it.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Well, let's leave it at that. I think that was a very effective conversation. So thank you.
So thanks very much for having us on.
Oh, it was a pleasure. So that was Clarion from Alt-Right FB, the Facebook page, and whatistthealtright.com. The next one is in about 40 minutes, and it's with Aidan Paladin. Oh, I'm sure she'll have a lot to say about the recent drama. All right, so thank you, Clarion, and I'll see the rest of you in about 40 minutes.
Thank you, both.